Hello, my name is Harold Felder, and welcome to Giving an Answer, the show dedicated to defending the historic Christian faith. Today, we're going to talk about the Da Vinci Code. If you don't know what it is, you will. A lot of you may already know. To talk about this topic, I have with me Larry Blythe, and let me tell you about Larry Blythe. He has an undergraduate degree in pastoral theology. He has a master's of arts in apologetics from Southern Evangelical Seminary. He actually spoke on this particular topic, the Da Vinci Code, at the National Apologetics Conference in Charlotte. He's also associate pastor at Southern Evangelical Church, and he started something called the Bible Institute. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
The Bible Institute is a free educational program that we offer on Sunday nights from 6 to 8, two classes, 6 to 7, 7 to 8. And it is a free Bible education, just short of a Bible college or a seminary. It's free to the public. Anybody can come. There are 8 courses right now that will take you 2 years to go through, or 4 semesters. And when you're done, you can get a certificate of education. And it's not an official certificate. It just shows that you went through some intensive Bible education.
Right.
And but you don't have to have that if you don't want to. It's all free. So.
And that's offered by Southern Evangelical Church. And to find out more about that, I think the website is southernevangelicalchurch.org.
Okay. Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, let's get to it. What is the Da Vinci Code?
The Da Vinci Code is a fictional book, to say it simply. The Da Vinci Code is a fictional book that's full of great intrigue and mystery and all the things you'd expect from a fictional book. It was written by an author named Dan Brown, and Dan Brown is following the story of the Holy Grail. However, the Holy Grail is not what you think. You know, we think it's the cup of Jesus. Dan Brown has retold the whole story, and it's actually not the chalice from the Last Supper. It is the fact that there is a secret society that has been guarding documents that can be found in a crypt. And in that crypt, there are documents showing that Christianity was a goddess feminist religion, that Mary Magdalene was married to Jesus, and that they had children. And when Jesus was crucified, Mary Magdalene and her family fled to France, and there they continued the royal bloodline. That's basically what the book is about, in a nutshell. I mean, there's much more to it. There's a lot of, you know, mystery and riddles and secrets and all that. It's actually a very well-written book. And it includes people like a professor of symbolism from Harvard as one of the characters. It includes a cryptologist, of course. Got to have that. A crippled millionaire historian, which is an important point.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a historian, a cryptologist, all these experts, somebody from Harvard, even though it's fiction. There's even a monk, an albino Opus Dei monk.
Opus Dei.
Yeah. All these characters go throughout history and throughout England, and they eventually arrive at, actually I can't give away the book because it would give the whole story away, but if you're a Christian, you shouldn't read it anyway.
So, and this is a very popular book. This is a bestseller.
Very, yes.
Right. As a matter of fact, they're making a movie of it, right?
They're making a movie, yeah.
And from my understanding, Ron Howard is going to direct it and Tom Hanks is going to star in it?
That's what I understand.
Yeah, so this is... Yeah. This is like taking a society by storm. I mean,
right.
And all of these allegations, even though it's a fictional book, a lot of these allegations, people actually take to heart. Could you give us a brief summary of the book?
Yeah, the reason that it's so important for us as Christians and why we're even talking about it, because it's kind of silly, you know, why are they talking on a
right.
apologetics program about a fictional book? There's a number of problems with this and why we are having to address this. Our society is actually taking this as fact. Now, it's Dan Brown's fault. And the reason is, I think it's kind of genius, actually. He wrote a fictional book, but at the front of the book, he says that this is fact. He says that all descriptions of artwork, architecture, documents, and secret rituals in the novel are accurate. So here you've got this fictional account, the story that's intriguing and fun to read, and your mind is saying fiction. Mm-hmm. But then when you read certain things about Christ and about the church and religion and Christianity, your mind's going, now, wait a minute, he said these parts are true. So he's actually having a door opened in your mind that you'd normally keep closed. If somebody said, did you know Jesus was married to Mary Magdalene? You'd go, ah, come on.
Right.
But he's created this fiction where he goes, these parts are true. And so you open your mind and go, oh, well, they must be true. My mom called me from California and said, a lady gave me a book called The Da Vinci Code and said she believes everything in it. And I said, Mom, you know, you need to ask her, what part of fiction did she not understand?
Right.
So it's an attack on Christianity. It's an attack on truth. It's an attack on documents that are very clear and plain that we have versus fictional part documents that most people say are not really accurate or not true. So you've got two things. You've got accurate historical documents against things that most people don't believe are true and there's very little evidence for. So not only do you have society forming false opinions on this disinformation, not misinformation, it's disinformation, it's purposeful. But in the book, one of the characters says, almost everything our fathers taught us about Christ is false. So you have people reading this and going, oh, wow, I didn't know this. So everything we've learned about Christ is false. There are facts in the book that they take little pieces of truth and they build a whole story around it. And that's very dangerous.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to propagate a lie, you don't want it to be, an obvious lie. When you go fishing, you don't put a note on the end of the hook and say, hey fish, I'm going to try to catch you. You put something good to the fish that they like. And that's with the book. They surround these false accusations, this false history, and they surround it with things. Also, Amazon.com and other people said this is impeccable research.
Oh.
Well, it's not. I mean, you go through and you find it's not impeccable research. In fact, it was the New York Daily News Book Review that said Brown's research is impeccable, and it's just goofy. Another publication says it's exhaustively researched. Well, he did something exhaustive, but he didn't do exhaustive research.
Okay.
That's for sure. Also, you have characters that are experts. One of the characters, T-Bing, he's an expert historian. Now, he's a character, but is what he's saying true?
Right, right.
Well, Brown says it's true.
It blurs the line between fiction and
absolutely. And that's why I said it's like a genius idea, because here you have a character who's a fictional character. Nobody exists like this person. And he's saying things in a fictional book that Brown is actually saying are true. So, I mean, it's very clever, very deceptive, and people are fooled by it. But he also does, Brown also does a lot of name dropping. He talks about the Dead Sea Scrolls and just all kinds of historical, archaeological things. So you can read it or skim through it and go, wow, he's researched a lot of these really important documents and things.
Right.
Problem is, he gets them wrong. He didn't even get the date of the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls correct. And in fact, not much in it is correct or accurate. And, the exhaustive research thing is just a complete deception. And, people would actually take a fictional book over the truth of Christianity and the documents that we have and how accurate the scriptures really are. So it's really silly. So it kind of boils down to about four things why we're defending against this.
Mm-hmm.
It attacks the reliability and the historicity of the Bible, which we have a mountain of evidence for. It also attacks the true nature of Christ,
right.
and for that matter, the nature of God and who God is, feminine goddess worship. Thirdly, it attacks the origin and development of Christian beliefs. And then last, of course, but not least, there's many others that we could identify. It attacks the activities of church leaders during the Christian church's formative years.
Yeah.
And it attacks all those things that are very important, because those are foundational truths that this author is attacking, plainly attacking.
What does Leonardo da Vinci have to do with this book? Why is it called the Da Vinci Code?
Well, that's what people really get excited about, because they love a conspiracy theory type thing. That's sort of how Leonardo fits into this. Because Leonardo, of course, was a Renaissance period artist, poet, inventor, you know, just a brilliant individual. But it is claimed that he was part of a secret society. And right away that starts generating, you know, excitement.
Yeah.
Ooh, secret society.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we've got movies out today that talk about secret societies.
Conspiracy theories.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we love it. And Leonardo is supposedly a part of the secret society that the book talks about, the curator of the museum in the Louvre, Paris. That Leonardo is a part of that, or was a part of that. He's dead now.
For some time.
Yeah, for quite a while. He's a part of that, and he's actually the predecessor in guarding the secret documents that have been passed along. And these secret documents, of course, as we said, will prove that Jesus married Mary Magdalene, they had children, and she continued the royal bloodline, which is the Holy Grail. You know, sorry about the Last Supper and the chalice. It's the royal bloodline that continued.
That's the grail.
And that he left behind, and they left behind over these centuries, many clues in his works and his paintings. He left certain marks and clues and codes, the Da Vinci Code, in his paintings, especially like the Last Supper, and which is just, it's totally bogus, which we probably won't have time to go into, but
why would he do that? I mean, if it's supposed to be a secret, why leave codes? Why, you know, all these little hints and stuff?
Exactly. I mean, that's what I
asked.
Yeah,
okay, that's a good answer. You know? That's a good answer.
Yeah, yeah, and the book actually leaves you hanging. So, you know, I give it away, okay. You know, they don't find this
Well, they
stuff.
Have to leave you hanging.
Yeah, you know.
Basing it upon the facts that you're talking about.
Well, that's what cracks me up, is that, you know, you're all excited to go through the book, and they end up not finding this. So, you know, it's all false. But, you know, it is actually all false. But he guarded these documents, and he put clues in his paintings. And, again, these documents show that Christianity began as a feminine goddess religion, which was deeded by Christ to Mary Magdalene at his death. Sorry, Catholics, he didn't give it to Peter. He gave it to Mary. And that after the crucifixion, Mary, of course, flees to Europe, starts the royal bloodline, and the secret is then suppressed by Constantine in 325. And throughout this book, Constantine is beaten up.
Yeah.
Actually, not really beaten up, he's used as a scapegoat, and he's blamed for everything. Mary is dethroned, and Jesus is then enshrined later. And so what Constantine did is he said, we can't have this go on and show that Christianity was Christian goddess worship. We have to show that it was actually, Jesus.
Mm.
Jesus is the one who, you know. And so Constantine is the bad guy who changed it all and ruined it from the actual truth. And it will also show, when they discover these documents, it'll show that the Bible was put together to bolster their claims. And the conspiracy is held for 1,700 years, and the Bible is a hoax, which again goes back to the question, you know, why hide it? So, you know, so I don't know. Makes a better story.
So let's actually talk about some of these specific, you know, things that they say and
these allegations.
Specific allegations, and let you refer to them or rebut them. One, Christians and pagans fought so fiercely during their conflict that the Roman Emperor Constantine, as you mentioned, decided to unite the entire empire under one religion, that religion being Christianity.
Well, Harold, before I refute that, let me say that there are perhaps 100 or more allegations that need to be addressed. And of course, we'd be here forever if we tried to do that. So there are many, many. And there's good books out there. There's a book by Richard Abanus that a lot of this information comes from to refute this. Very good book. But in the allegation that you mentioned that that Constantine actually suppressed paganism and he made the new religion, Christianity, plain and simple, it's just not true. There's no historical evidence to show that at all. In fact, Constantine, what he actually did is he granted freedom of worship
right.
to Christians in AD 313. He didn't make it, the single religion, Christianity, the state religion. He didn't do that. It wasn't until 381 or AD 381, not 325, that during Theodosius's reign, not Constantine, that Christianity was made the state religion. Some people may say, well, so what? Well, it's important because Dan Brown says these things are facts.
Yeah.
These things are not facts. Yeah. Plain and simple, Dan Brown couldn't even get that right.
If the Bible had one date that was wrong, they would throw the whole Bible out. They would say, okay, well, the Bible, we can't trust it. He gets a couple of things wrong, but, you know, we can overlook that.
Absolutely. You nailed it. I mean, that's exactly the case. But, you know, also in answer to this thing, this particular allegation, many other major factors led to Rome's fall, not just the pagan-Christian conflict. So what he does is he just takes one specific historical event and he says, oh, I'm going to make this cover yeah. all of the this yeah. area of error.
Yeah.
And that's just simply ridiculous. It's just not the case. And that allegation, no other way to say it, it's false.
Now, the next one is something you hear from a lot of cults and a lot of the other religions, that the Christian scriptures evolved over countless translations, editions, and revisions.
Yeah, yeah, that's a biggie. And of course, the Jesus Seminar, of which it's neither, and many others try to criticize at this point. And of course, Dan Brown just picked it up and put it in a fictional book, did the same thing. There's a lot of problems with that statement. And again, that statement being that Christian scriptures evolved down through the centuries and translations. It's the old thing you hear in grammar school, you know. Oh, there's so many, it was translated so many times, yeah. it's just not accurate anymore.
Yeah.
Well, that's just ridiculous because of the way it was translated. And we do have a definitive version of the book. The Old Testament and New Testament is well established by existing manuscripts. People don't realize how important it is, the amount of manuscripts we have, because it's a boring subject.
Yeah.
I mean, you try to talk to somebody about manuscripts and how many manuscripts we have. Put me to sleep. But it's very important when it comes to the truth of the accuracy of this book, the Bible. So the Old Testament, New Testament is well established by many manuscripts, extensively compared and contrasted. I mean, that's something else people don't realize, how extensively it's been compared to the other manuscripts. And there are many, many copies that are dated very close to the original autographs within 25 years. That's important too because yeah. Myths can develop
yeah.
and there are no longer eyewitnesses. So it's very important. We don't have any other ancient document that is as close to the original time that it happened as the New Testament documents. One man said, F.F. Bruce, a great scholar, said this, if the New Testament were a collection of secular writings, their authenticity would generally be regarded as beyond all doubt.
Yeah.
But like you said earlier, when it comes to the Bible, oh, one problem
right,
and
right,
you know, throw
right.
it all out.
Yeah.
We have many earlier manuscripts within 25 years. There's a 25-year gap compared to other ancient writings, a 1,000-year gap.
Yeah.
We have a 25-year gap between when the events happened and when the writings actually took place, some of the writings that we have. We have more manuscripts. There are over 5,600 manuscripts of the New Testament as compared to between 10 and 20 manuscripts of other ancient yeah. writings. We have more accurately copied manuscripts. The Bible is 99.95% accurate versus 90% and on down with right. other ancient documents. And other than that, we have 18,000 non-Greek manuscripts, 36,000 quotations. You could burn all the Bibles and put together most of the Bible just with quotations. So, you know, on and on it goes.
Okay, let's try to move on. Let's Talk about the next one. Constantine commissioned and financed a new Bible that omitted the Gospels that talked about Jesus' human traits and embellished those that made him God-like.
Yeah, yeah. Another, you know, we could stop just by saying, you know, false. It's just simply false. However, there is no historical evidence to this accusation whatsoever. Where he got this, I don't know, from the Gnostic Gospels or somewhere. It's just completely false. The New Testament is full of Christ's human traits. We find in Matthew 8 his amazement. The Bible depicts Jesus as 100% human, and his human traits, this accusation that the Bible withheld human traits is ridiculous. We find in Mark 11 that Jesus was angry. We find in Luke 4 and Luke 8 that he was fatigued, that he was hungry. We find Jesus being sorrowful in John 11, and on it goes.
He also wept.
Yeah, he wept. We see human traits constantly. And since he was 100% human, yes, 100% deity, 100% God, mm-hmm. but people forget, also 100% man.
Right.
Omitting his humanity would have been contrary even during Constantine's day. So it just simply was not the case. And they also talk about that they burned all these books. That simply wasn't true. The writings of Arius were ordered by Constantine to be burned, not the New Testament documents. So again, simply false. And he never gave orders, Constantine, never gave orders against pagan or Gnostic Gospels. In fact, the Gnostic Gospels were written much later than New Testament Gospels.
Right, right.
A couple hundred years later.
Right.
So, you know, it's really ridiculous. And also the Gnostic Gospel writers didn't have authority. They were not apostles of Jesus. They were not associated with apostles of Jesus. So they were just false. And also the Gnostic Gospels were not written by people whose names were attached to them. Mary didn't write the Gospel of Mary. Philip didn't write the Gospel of Philip. Thomas, those are all pseudonyms.
Right.
So it's just false.
The next one, it was at the Council of Nicaea in 325 AD that the church leaders actually voted to make Jesus divine. Before that, he was just viewed as a mortal prophet.
Yeah, this is the Jehovah's Witnesses try to pull this to bait and switch. Others do too. The Council of Nicaea had absolutely nothing to do with deciding Jesus' divinity. The main subject was Arius and his teaching that Jesus was only a created being.
Right.
That's what the important point was. Followers were already getting it. You know, followers were already, by the end of Christ's earthly ministry, Thomas in John 20:28 says, "My Lord and my God," or "the Lord of me and the God of me," to Jesus. He said, they were already getting this,
right.
His divinity. It
right.
wasn't decided in 325.
Right.
Also in John 1:1, Titus 2:3, Hebrews 1, Peter 1:1, all of these. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and God was the Word.
Right.
So they were already getting it at that time. Yes, at first it was a little difficult for them, but they were already getting it. So by the end of the second century, way before 325, AD 325, Christians had already also held firmly to his deity. Justin Martyr talks about the deity of Jesus. Irenaeus in 185, talks about the deity of Jesus, our Lord and God. Clement of Alexandria, around 200, says, "Truly most manifest deity, he that is made equal to the Lord of the universe because he was his son," and many, many other instances. So it's just simply
okay.
False.
Well, let's try to lump together these next couple of the whole thing about Jesus being married and this royal bloodline thing.
Yeah, that's just simply ridiculous. He tries to give us the example of four, well, first of all, he says scores of historians agree to this royal bloodline. And then he names four. Now, I don't know, last time you checked, scores is not four.
No.
And each of these, it'll suffice to say with this bloodline thing, to cut that whole thing short, because like I said, it can bog you down with information. These are not experts. These four scholars that he mentions in his book are not experts in any way, shape, or form. One of them holds an MA in comparative literature in German. Two of the authors that he mentions, these great historians, both are conspiracy theorists, and they have a penchant for the occult. and paranormal and UFOs. These are not historians. It's just simply ridiculous. That is fiction.
Could you, in 2 minutes, summarize your whole point, your whole argument?
Yes, I can. Here's what's important about this. There are a number of reasons why this is bad scholarship. And let me just mention a few. What he does is he has a flight from good hard evidence. This is a tactic that people use, and they leave good hard evidence behind, and they take only what they want. Solid historical, archaeological source material, they throw it by the wayside. Dan Brown does this. He substitutes opinion for fact, very dangerous. He twists the language of the historical source out of context to make it mean what he wants it to mean. He exchanges objectivity for bias in this book and in his scholarship, supposedly. It's what might be called the smorgasbord or buffet type of scholarship or research, ignoring the good stuff and only picking what he wants to use. Mm. And it's a facade of scholarship. It's just simply not scholarship. And in the case of fiction, he exaggerates at will. He takes data out of the place where it should be, and whenever he wants, he exaggerates. Very dangerous book, okay. A book that needs to be defended.
Okay, right. Thanks a lot. Very informative. That ends this show. Be sure to join me again next week. And until then, goodbye and God bless.